now I'm going to go shove in chocolate chips to this cookie. It's probably going to break. It's going to crumble. Meanwhile, you and your soccer team over here standing with no cookies to eat, or they kind of taste gross and they're all like crumbly and falling apart. Would you ask me to do that again? No, you just lost trust. Is a user going to go and buy your product again when they can't use it very well?
Welcome to another episode of the EdTech Connect podcast. I met today's guest at a recent conference. She's a frequent presenter at conferences where she talks about user experience strategies, and her sessions fill up. Melanie Lindahl is a senior user experience designer at the University of Texas at Austin, where she blends creative vision with practical strategy to make digital experiences more intuitive, inclusive, and effective. With a master's degree in web design and development from the University of Denver and a Bachelor of Fine Arts from Texas Tech University, Melanie brings both artistic sensibility and technical expertise to her work. She recently captured national attention at the Hi-Ed Web Annual Conference in Albuquerque, where her presentation on budget-friendly UX strategies for higher education earned the prestigious Red Stapler Award for Best in Track and Best in Conference. Known for her engaging, hands-on approach, Melanie demonstrates how even institutions with limited budgets can deliver high-impact, user-centered design. Melanie's passion for demystifying UX and empowering teams to start small, but start now, has inspired educators and designers across the country. Well, welcome to the show, Melanie. It's great to have you today.
Thanks. I'm here.
Well, I want to start off by asking you a question before we dive into the UX strategy. Tell me one quirky or unexpected thing about you that your colleagues at UT Austin might not know.
Actually, this was kind of funny because I feel like I'm enough of an open book to it. may not be a whole lot, but some of my colleagues will know, like, I have triplets, and that's not necessarily not known. But what they may not know is that I used to do a little comic strip about them. So I've been logging the funny things that they say since they could talk. And I started doing like a little comic strip about it. And it's like real crude and quick. And that was kind of the idea. You know, it was during the pandemic and it's fallen off now. But yeah, you could go look at my Instagram and scroll back in history and see all the silly things that they used to say.
I love that. I'll have to get your Instagram. So yeah. I want to check that out. I used to love comics when I was really little. I tried to make up my own comics. So
yeah.
That's really awesome. You've had a pretty fascinating path from fine arts to UX design. How has that creative foundation shaped the way you approach user experience?
You know, the interesting thing is it is almost the opposite. So when I create art for myself, right? Unless I'm commissioned. But with UX work, it's the exact opposite. I actually have to remove myself from that experience and only focus on building things for other people. So my brain actually has to switch back and forth quite a bit between doing work for me and doing work for other people. So it almost hasn't shaped it in a way, because it's actually the opposite of what it is.
That's interesting. You just made me remember a guest I had on a couple months ago. Her name's Tracy Halverson. She's the CEO of Adeo, an agency, and she's an artist. And that's exactly what she said. She's like, I'm an artist for me, and the rest kind of comes out of that. So I get that. What first drew you into higher ed user experience, and why have you stayed in that lane?
Yeah, higher ed, it's a unique space, right? It's an interesting space. So I was already working in higher ed when I got my master's degree. And that master's program focused on users. And this was actually quite a long time ago. It was kind of a newer approach to teaching, you know, web development and computer science and those sorts of things. And so it was easy to get into higher ed because I was already here. And then my first job that I had sort of doing this work here, I made a comment, I think it was my first week, I made a comment that something wasn't user-friendly. And they said, we don't care. And it was like this Bon Jovi moment where it was like, shot through the heart, oh my gosh. And I started looking around and I was realizing, oh, UX work isn't really being done in higher ed very much. Okay, how can I change that? And I'm still trying to change that. that's why I do these presentations, so that anyone will feel empowered to do this kind of work. Even small amounts of it can add up into something bigger. You know, they can do it at any time during a project.
I get that. You made me think of something else too. I've always felt like I'm a kind of a jack of all trades, but a master of none. Yeah. And I've dabbled in web design and programming, and I like graphic design. And recently I started using some of these tools like Lovable. Lovable is one of those vibe coding platforms where you can just kind of prompt something to be built, and even Claude. Uh-huh. So I'm starting to use these AI tools a little bit for UX. Have you used any of these tools, like, to prototype anything?
Yeah, well, prototyping. So I love this question because everyone is trying to figure this out, right? And I'll tell you what I currently do and then maybe what I hope to do in the future. So currently I use AI mainly to help me ideate. Like, I feel like it's pretty strong in that area. You know, I actually took a course from the Nielsen Norman Group this year, specifically about AI in UX, and very relevant for me. It was a wonderful course. So I can give AI prompts in a certain way, ask it to give me multitudes of answers and ideas back. So I do like it for the ideation. On our last project, I had it help me summarize our user testing findings into kind of actionable items and sort of like a report structure as kind of that first draft. And in the near future, I'm hoping to spin up my own instance of ChatGPT or some equivalent for a specific persona that I can bounce ideas off of. But honestly, I need to test that quite a bit because I'm a bit wary of that path. I worry that the feedback an AI-generated persona will give me is a little recursive or a little too, like, being a sycophant, you know, a little too, like, eager to please. But we'll see. I'd have to test it. And mainly, I feel like I just want to be faster so I can get more work done. But for the prototyping, I've had no good luck with it designing anything good.
Yeah.
Not yet. But the designing is the fun part. Like, I want to do that. AI, go do my reports for me. All that stuff. Yeah, I don't want to go do that.
Yeah. Well, you're getting into something where, here's how I feel. I feel like there's a spectrum, right? There's hardcore programming over here, and there's creative over here, and there's a spectrum. I feel like UX is kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
And what I'm excited about, like, for you, is that I think your job is secure for a long time.
Oh, good.
Because, like, when I use these tools, I'm like, I have this idea. It kind of does pretty well. But I need the final mile. I need to give this to you. And then you can be like, oh, yeah, I get your idea. I can make that better.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's not even close to being a final product when you're using these. So, yeah, programming wise, like, we're not going to need as many junior level programmers. But I think the UX people are here for a while because you need to take this output and adjust these little because UX is a bunch of little things, right? It's hard to...
Well, it's human-centered design, and that can be a little harder for AI to quite grasp all those idiosyncrasies and little tiny micro interactions that you need a user to do, you know?
Right, right. Well, let's get into, like, what you are becoming famous for is these talks all over the country where you're talking about user experience on a budget. I mean, this is great for higher ed. You know, like I said in your intro, Melanie is presenting at conferences and winning awards, largely because no one's doing what she's doing. These aren't common topics, I think, at conferences. It's a lot of this, like, I jumped into AI pretty early in this podcast here, but tell me about, like, you've said higher ed budgets for UX are often, you know, small or non-existent. How do you make a compelling case to leadership for user experience investment?
Well, the term investment implies money, and that scares a lot of people. It doesn't go over very well. So I look at UX on how can we help achieve business goals for the university. Are we low on enrollment? Are we not attracting the caliber of students we want? Are we spending too much staff time fielding admission calls because the website sucks? Like, whatever it is, UX can help with those pain points. Like, it's here for that. Through thoughtful research and identifying issues, requirements, solutions, like, it's here for all of it. So let's just get on board and take off into outer space so we can make the better product.
Can you walk us through the budget-friendly UX strategies you presented at these recent conferences, especially the one where you won the Red Stapler Award?
So that was a fun event. High Ed Web, which is now called DigiCall, is full of really wonderful people who are so into a dialogue with each other. And I love it there. So I told the folks at the talk, here's the UX activities that are the biggest bang for your buck This is what you could be doing now. They don't take much time, effort, no money if you don't have it. Like, you know, it really can be as boiled down as just chatting with your users. What a great idea. I didn't come up with that. I'm just telling people to go do it. Sending people surveys, interviewing them, doing light testing throughout your design phase. So kind of the main takeaway was it's cheaper to do UX now versus shoving it in after you launch. And it doesn't have to take much of your time. So let's just start doing more of it because not enough is being done in higher ed.
Before I forget, let's give Digital Collegium a plug. Both Millie and I will be there. She'll be presenting, right? You'll be presenting there. I'll be doing a different topic, but it's in Grand Rapids, Michigan this year. It's the end of September. So everybody go check it out. It's probably one of the best, you know, high ed conferences out there.
I agree.
So yeah, do it often, do it early. You know what I used to do? Tell me if you do any of this. Like when I was at Sacramento State, I was a web director there. I started this, we call it the Student Technology Advisory Group. I'd try to bring in 8 students. The trick is getting students to show up. I realized all we needed was pizza.
Yeah, like just food. Give them pizza. Food is huge. Yeah.
Yeah. And so show up, it would be more of a focus group.
Yeah.
We did some testing too. The UX testing we did, we just asked them to find some things, do these things. And there was huge insights there. Yeah. That's where we learned, like, they go to the search bar. They're not even looking on our page.
That's going to be in my talk. I'm calling it the spicy click. It's like, why are they doing that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really eye-opening to just one strategy you probably talk about is like, just get some students to like talk to you one-on-one, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about like, what's your go-to tool set? Like there's so many tools out there. I get a little overwhelmed. Like I don't even know what to try anymore these days because there's just so many out there.
Mm-hmm. My tool set is my brain. I mean, it's really, I don't use anything expensive. I've never used eye tracking software. I've never felt like I have a need for it. I do my kind of stuff through that hands-on, you know, user approach, talking with them a lot, user interviews. I'll just set up a table in the building with some donuts, kind of known for as the donut person that gives everyone donuts. And we'll just talk and we'll go through pain points. We send out surveys, those top task surveys, I talk about a lot because they are huge gold mines for your project. And they cost so little employee time and no money, right? Like this is things that everyone can be doing. So when it comes to tooling, it's literally just me figuring out what I need to do and going and doing it. I use Excel for my notes. Like I can't have AI take my notes for me because... Yeah. It doesn't know when they missed that thing I need them to test, or they went and did some spicy clicks over here. And I'm like, what was that? Yeah. I need a human to take those notes. So I don't have tools. Like I probably should, right? Well, I've had plenty of success without tools.
Well, that's refreshing to know, like there's no pressure there's not a tool everybody's using or needs to use. If you want to use tools, great.
Right. But I mean, I do use Figma for prototyping. We do pay for that. I was using XD for a long time because it already came with the suite, but it wasn't quite cutting it for me. So we hopped into Figma and we're definitely more happy with that. But you can get by without that, you know?
And now a word from our sponsor.
How can your next campaign soar? With experience helping colleges and universities raise billions of dollars, Mackey Strategies delivers communications, fundraising, and tech expertise that your campaign can take to the bank. Mackey Strategies, build your breakthrough.
Well, let's go back to AI. You know, we talked a little bit about, I'll tell you how I was using AI and it's directly related to UX. Have you done anything like using AI with personas or how do you see AI fitting into more of the UX research and design in the coming years, especially in higher ed?
Yeah. So like I said, I do want to spin up an instance for personas so I can start testing to see if it's going to work or not, because I'm a little dubious. I know some people have started doing that. I'm a little bit more of the Gen X. Hey, I'm less likely to adopt new tech until it's proven its worth. Because yeah, we've been through quite a lot of tech changes in the Gen X time. But yeah, so I'm hoping that in the future, it will be, because I already use it for ideation. So I'm pretty set there, although it could always, I'm sure, be better in some way. But the note taking would be so nice, because then I wouldn't have to go bother my coworkers to come and take notes for me during all these testing sessions. That would be super nice. But I just don't know if it's going to get there anytime soon. Like, I don't know.
We are in the same boat. I think you're right. I think it's a Gen X thing because I'm a Gen X too. And I have all the note takers set up and they all do all their, every system I'm doing, but I never go back to them. I still use my little, it's my notepad here. So it's like, we know it's there, but I'm like, what's funny is I'm not even a big app guy. Everything, my kids, Cub Scouts, the soccer team, all this has an app for this and that. I'm the worst one about downloading and getting the app.
It's a commitment. It's a commitment to download an app and give them I go and look at what content do you have? What are you keeping about me? Right? Like if it's a long list, no, sorry.
Well, I just can't even filter through. I feel almost embarrassed that I start talking about this, but even like the soccer team people are telling me, did you get that message? Did you get my email? I'm like, I can't, my personal email box is kind of a mess right now. I'm waiting for someone to scream at me that you missed something. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like
that's kind of where I'm at. Bubble up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. little sidetracked, but yeah, some similarities there. I feel you, Melanie.
Yeah. I think a lot of us are in the same boat with AI and it's some kind of weird race, but we don't know where the finish line is. So
I love that. That might be my soundbite for this.
Yeah, there you go.
What are some myths about user experience, especially in higher ed, that you love to bust?
Yeah, there's one in particular that I think people who are trying, they're not me, they're not a UX designer, they're just somebody who wants to do good. They want to do right by their users and they're trying to get that permission or whatever. The myth that it takes longer and it's more expensive to do UX, it's totally the opposite. There's so many things I could say, but it actually costs more.
Yeah, we don't have time for that is not the right answer, right?
Yeah. It costs more. It'd be like, okay, Jeff, if you were like, Melanie, I don't bake cookies, but let's pretend like I bake cookies. And you said, I need a dozen chocolate chip cookies for some party, my soccer game, whatever. Okay. And then I bake them and I let them cool. And then I realized, oh, Jeff needed chocolate chip cookies. I didn't do that. Maybe I didn't even ask you what you needed. Now I'm going to go shove in chocolate chips to this cookie. It's probably going to break. It's going to crumble. Meanwhile, you and your soccer team over here standing with no cookies to eat, or they kind of taste gross and they're all like crumbly and falling apart. Would you ask me to do that again? No, you just lost trust. Is a user going to go and buy your product again when they can't use it very well? No, like it's not in your best interest. So doing UX throughout the project ensures that the user's needs are met, ensures the trust is provided, right?
Right. It makes so much sense now that we talk back, look back, and even to anyone out there would probably say, oh, yeah. But when it comes down to it, when leadership comes to you and says, this has to be done in 2 months, you look at your project timeline, the first thing that's going to get cut is the front end work, like every time almost. So I totally hear you. It makes so much sense. And one thing I would recommend, and tell me what you think about this. This helps you down the road too. When you go back and you have this room of baby boomers that are trying to make a decision on what Gen Z wants, and they think they want this and this and this, and you have, look, I have data here. You're wrong.
UX does not do well with assumptions, right?
Right. So you got to do it for that too, because you know you're going to fight the consensus. Like when we dumb down at the end of the very lowest common denominator, when 20 people that are in leadership want to get what they want, but you have the data saying our students want this.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll help you justify it in the beginning.
Well, and also like a normal project life cycle includes iterative feedback from your users. So why would I ask permission to do a project the correct way? Is it a budget thing? Well, there's plenty of things we can do with little time and little money. So that doesn't hold water.
Yeah. Well, I think a big part of it is like in any job, I guess, like I think why I first really wanted to get you on this podcast is because when people are in their job for a while, they build this confidence. Some people have confidence built into their personality. But once you've been in a job for a while, you love your job, you're the one that people are going to start looking to. You probably have a little more sway in your role than other people in theirs because you're like, I know how I'm going to do it. It's not going to be like an ask. It's going to be like, this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
So when you're new to your role, it's kind of hard to do, but I think try to have that confidence Melanie has going in saying, this is just the way we have to do it.
Yeah, don't ask for permission. Like, why? It's the better thing to do. Just work it into your project. And that's the way you should have done it.
Let someone else cut out the project. Like, you're really going to have to fight me on this one because we need it. We need it bad. Please be that in higher ed. It's so easy to sit back and just, yeah, we can do that. And I realized late in my career, I was kind of like, oh yeah, you really, is this a battle I want to fight or not? So.
I'm pretty feisty. I'll fight most of the time. People can hit me up on LinkedIn. We'll come up with some dialogue.
What about institutions that don't have a dedicated UX person on staff? What are the first small steps they can take to integrate it into their work?
Yeah, most people don't have me on their team. But the good news is, again, there's lots of UX things that you can do in your projects. And the best small step, I mean, I don't know if it sounds corny, it's just do something. It's better than nothing. Just go talk to users about your pain points, about their pain points. Like, you could do that. Just start asking questions, get the dialogue rolling with your users. Because seriously, when you start doing that, you do not stop. Like, it's like a Pringles pop can. Like, you don't stop. Mm-hmm. It just keeps feeding. And then your leadership starts seeing the results of that really juicy feedback. And then it just kind of continues to grow like a snowball.
Is UT Austin set up where you're really siloed and there's departments everywhere and like other areas, divisions might have their own, maybe not UX person, but their own web team that kind of does their own thing?
Yeah. There are services, like overarching services. I believe they're paid for, you know, in certain ways. So if you don't have a dedicated person or, you know, they've set up a Drupal kit so people can do kind of the basic stuff. But our team at the law school is very lean, but we're very effective because the law school, a lot of law schools have to build and maintain their own tools because we don't fit into main campus, even like a course schedule. We don't even fit into the course schedule because our times are wacky. But yeah, so we have to have this really robust team, but we're super small for what we do. Like, we're very mighty, but we're very small and lean. But for people starting out, just get the ball rolling, right? Try one little thing and then do the next thing and just kind of keep working on those little steps.
Yeah. It's something that's often left out. You just got to do it.
Yeah.
I have one for you here that I kind of am really interested in. Do you have any time where you thought of that you've had a small UX change that had a surprisingly big impact on a student or staff experience?
Yeah, this is interesting because the work that I do for the law school is mostly project-based. So it's like a whole project would have had an impact. And reflecting, there's lots of wins. We have lots of wins all the time because of the work that I do. And it's wonderful. And the students love it and the staff love it. And faculty are kind of, you know, always sort of never pleased. So you never really know about them. But we built a student dashboard years ago, where law students can do pretty much everything they really need to do from there. And we have a list of important dates in this kind of side panel, mainly so they don't have to go look stuff up all the time. Like, when is the last day to drop a class? And we had the final exam week listed. This is a very small thing. We had the final exam week. It's like a week, right? So we decided to change it. We have the students' data. We know when their final exams are because we know the registration. So we ended up changing it out and swapping the final exam week for their specific final exam dates. So in that important dates list, now it says your business, law, whatever class, here's your exam date for that. Here's your exam date for that. So it's more meaningful to them. And the students were really happy to have that change because, again, it was one less thing they had to go look up. So that's just like a tiny thing, like a tiny little nugget that students end up, or anybody, you know, benefits from that UX that you do because you realize like, oh yeah, we can just do this one thing. And it's actually kind of a bigger impact because it saves people time or mental load.
I can't remember if you were in, you and I sat in some of the same sessions at EduWeb, you know, a couple months ago. One of them was revealing some research. And what came out was that a lot of research on personalization and that how you don't have to personalize as much as you think.
Yes, I was in that one.
Were you in that one? I was like, yes, thank you. How do you look at personalization with UX in general?
Yeah, there's a balance. And I'll be honest, I haven't figured it out yet. So we have tons of student data, right? And the things that we build, the tools that we build for them, we try to make sure they have to do the least amount of work. So a lot of times it is, you know, personalized. Like, their course schedule, of course, is personalized. Let's display that instead of something else. Or, hey, we already know what textbooks you need for this class. Can we just go ahead and put that on there for you? So it's more about helping. So for people who are already in the system, it makes sense. For people who are outside the system, like a prospective student or a parent or a donor or whoever it is, I guess a donor is not really outside the system, but it was at the session that talked about the creep factor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that a lot because it is. It's so true. You're like, well, you don't want to come across as like breathing over people's necks in some weird way. So we haven't figured that out yet. We had a website redesign a couple of years ago, and that was something we talked about was, is there any personalization we could do? We ultimately decided, well, we don't have enough time because our launch date got accelerated. But also, I'm not sure we're ready for that because we're not sure how to do it effectively. Like what goals, I always go back to goals. What goals do we have? What needs do we have as a university that requires us to do that? Are we just gathering big data to have big data? Like, what are we doing here? So I'd like to know what we're doing so that we can effectively give the user the experience they need, right?
It always goes back to the why.
Yeah.
I feel like with personalization, it shouldn't feel like personalization. Like if you look at Netflix or Amazon, you know, it doesn't feel like anything. It feels like, wow, there's no idea. Like maybe your first name's up there, but to tell people what you know about them is not the idea. It's more like, yeah, use it to serve up what they need in that moment. Like, why are we doing this? What is this page for?
What they need, but also it marries with what we need them to do, right? So, yeah.
Right. We have to guide them. It's really hard. I talk about why it's so hard in higher ed for so many reasons. Like, right, we're in this really complex digital ecosystem because of all the silos we have. We have poor digital governance in general.
Yes.
Because we have hundreds of people publishing content, which is not normal compared to other private sectors. And then we have all these personas. Like all these, like whether they're students and all the different flavors of the students, or we have donors, community members, faculty, administrators, they can go on and on. So it's just, I think it's the most complicated, really vertical I've ever worked in. And I,
because you're not selling one product. You're selling a lot of products for people. It could be a degree. It could be a plaque on a wall. Like it could be all kinds of things.
And we have less money, right?
And we have no money to do it.
We have less money. And so now we're compared to a Netflix, which has one goal to get you to watch a show.
Yeah.
And everyone has the same goal. It's completely, I have all the money. It's completely different.
Yeah. It's not like if we were Apple, it's technology products, right? There's your product. But no, we have so many products that we're trying to give people or have them work with us. And it is very hard. I haven't really thought about that a whole lot. I'm going to think about that some more.
Well, I want to ask you one more question, and it's kind of the same thing I've been asking in a different way here. But if you could give one piece of advice to any higher ed team wanting to improve their website or digital experience tomorrow, what would it be?
I think talking to your users about their pain points, and I mean diving in there, understanding them, that's where a lot of your solutions are going to start coming from. And that's where you'll be able to alleviate those pain points and have their experience become less painful and more meaningful.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that our team is always trying to do is like, where's the problem and how can we fix it? So if you can just start talking to your users about pain points that they experience, and it doesn't have to be in the digital space, right? It could be literally, oh, the sidewalk is non-existent over here and I have to walk over here, you know, whatever it is. But just start talking to people about their pain points. That's a great starting place.
Good advice. Love it. It's often overlooked. So
yeah.
Don't skip your UX, everybody. I'm going to put links to Melanie's bio and UT Austin's website in the show notes. And Melanie, it was great having you on.
Thank you, Jeff. I loved it. I love talking about all of it so much.
Well, you're good at it. So keep doing it. And everyone, go see Melanie at Digital Collegium or... she has a lot of recordings out there too. So bye-bye.
Bye.
As we wrap up this episode, remember EdTech Connect is your trusted companion on your journey to enhance education through technology. Whether you're looking to spark student engagement, refine EdTech implementation strategies, or stay ahead of the curve in emerging technologies, EdTech Connect brings you the insights you need. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an inspiring and informative episode. And while you're there, please leave us a review. Your feedback fuels us to keep bringing you valuable content. For even more resources and connections, head over to edtechconnect.com, your hub for EdTech reviews, trends, and solutions. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.